You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 570. And listen, people, last time or two times ago, I was talking about the moon landing conspiracy thing, and Hallie Bullock got mad at me for even playing around with such dangerous fire, which I can appreciate. But listen to this. We were also talking about how Yuletide is Odentide. You know, that's literally what it means, is Odentide. That's what it means. And, you know, people talk about Santa Claus, and they talk about how Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus, which isn't really true. Santa Claus has existed for at least 1,000 years or more. And even Santa Claus in red and Santa Claus in a hat and Santa Claus in black boots, he was around in poetry in the 1700s and 1800s. What Coca-Cola did is they kind of took the most popular aspects from a bunch of different folk tales and assembled them into, I guess, the most iconic Santa Claus we can think of today. You know, he's got the short red jacket, the red pants, the boots, the thick white neatly combed beard, the beard that doesn't go down to the belly, you know, just kind of goes down, you know, 10 inches or whatever. You know, the manicured beard, if you will, the hat, the sack, you know. Coca-Cola basically codified Santa as we know him. But that Santa had existed in many different forms before Coca-Cola, you know. And I was thinking about that. And you know, think about it. He's all-seeing or all-knowing. He lives up in a far-off mountain, you know. He rewards the good and punishes the wicked, you know. He's got this big white beard. And you know, he's often surrounded by holly. You know, Santa Claus is also associated with holly, you know. And, of course, and more, you might know this. Who also is associated with holly?
Odin.
So here's the question, people. All-knowing. Lives in a mountain, rewards the good, punishes the wicked, has a big beard, wears black boots, likes holly. Is Santa Claus Odin? Has Santa Claus been Odin all along? And that's where he's hiding out. You decide, fact or fiction, with Jonathan Fricks. I mean, with John Gentile, Punk News Podcast.
You cracked the code, man. Also, I love the amount of time that was spent on like just Santa fashion. You know, the cut of his jacket, his beard style. I'm totally enjoying this.
Well, I mean, I think you can make a damn good argument that Odin is Santa Claus. I mean, like, it's pretty hard not to argue it, you know. Oh, he comes around on Yuletide, Odin time, and here he is, you know. I mean, like I realize we'll get back. We'll start talking about punk in a second. But I realize that most deities are all-knowing, but, like, that's Odin's thing, is he plucked out one of his eyes to be all-knowing, you know? So that's, like, his thing. And that's what Santa is. I'm saying it's the same guy. That's what I'm saying. So, listen, this is a Punk News Podcast where we talk about punk rock and that kind of stuff.
So I Googled, is Santa Odin? And you get a lot of results.
Oh, really? I'm not the,
yeah. What does it say?
Well, the first thing I first thing I'm reading says Santa Claus may owe his earliest influence to Odin.
Hey.
Yeah. You're onto something here, John.
What, actually, don't you hate that when you think you have a clever thought and like many people have thought of it before you? And that's the case here. So, oh well. So anyways, this is Punk News Podcast. Oh, one other quick thing, and then we'll do some mail. I saw The Garden this past weekend, the brothers Fletcher and Wyatt Shears. They're touring off the Kiss My Super Bowl Ring album. It was fantastic. It is freaky. It's punk rock. It's grindcore. It's electro. It's like dance music. And that sounds like bad mashed together, but it's like super clever, super weird. And also, I can't get over how gigantic The Garden is. They played a sold out Union Transfer show in Philadelphia. The kids were packed out. I mean, it was funny. I was in the quote pit, and it's like super jam packed. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be that jam packed. So maybe in the bar area, it'll be a little bit more spaced out. There was like three people in the bar because everyone was under 21. So I'm like, wow, this is great, you know. And so The Garden were amazing people. They're so far out that I don't even enjoy all of it, but I know that I will eventually because it's that far out. So The Garden rules, people. So good, so good. Let's do some mail. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Reinhardt. Reinhardt says, hey, everyone, I have something to add to your conspiracy theory-laced in-depth discussion of the peeing incident on last week's show. Reinhardt's referring to the singer of Brass Against taking a whiz on stage. Oh, wait. Here's what Reinhardt has to say. Did you take into account that there might have been a second peer on the grassy knoll behind the stage? The angles of the splashing just don't add up. The singer certainly should be very the singer should be very wary of any disgruntled Daytona nightclub managers who might want to take her out of the picture. Just some food for thought from Reinhardt.
Fantastic.
And then he adds, he agrees with you, Harry. He says, anyone who was actually shocked by this should be subjected to some mandatory Gigi Allen live footage. I'm just saying. And he's right. He's right. You know? So he goes to the podcast at punkleaf.org. Let's play a song. And we'll come back. So we're going to play a song by a band that we're going to talk about when we come back. This is Lenny Bull. And more. Tell us about Lenny Bull.
Hey, yeah. So, Lenny Bull is a Toronto-based punk musician. She has a band who plays with her, but she's mainly just herself. And her style, well, like you've just heard, she just released her new single, Elevator. And it has a very, like, vintage kind of retro punk vibe. Like, there's a lot of like proto punk going on, and some how do you say her name properly? Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah,
because I said it earlier and it was like, no wait, that's wrong, so I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, so there's a bit of that going on in the vocals, and it's just, it's really, really cool. So all of the music she's put out has been like this vintagey kind of throwback sound, and it works. And Elevator's good, has a great attitude, has a great guitar solo. It's kind of like lo-fi. It's off her upcoming album, Strange Vacation. So when I listened to it, I was like, oh, yeah, well, I know it's proto-punk, but I want to try to, like, pinpoint a band that it sounds like. So then I found, I fell down a rabbit hole. She doesn't really sound like this band at all, but I fell down a rabbit hole with The Fugs, who have a song called...
Oh, The Fugs, yeah!
Yep, and I had never heard of them before. So that was an afternoon well spent. But that was really cool. What did you guys think of Lenny Bull?
I liked it. I mean, I liked her vocals and like just the overall sound. Like I loved that it reminded me of so much of that like late 70s, early 80s, kind of like you said, like proto punk. But I just wanted to like the song a little better. Like I wanted it to just grab me a little bit more. But I thought it was like very authentically capturing something very cool about, like, yeah, just early punk. And I you're right. I do hear, like, I didn't think about it at the time, but there's definitely like a Chrissie Hynde quality to the vocals. There's maybe even almost like a Patti Smith, like, yeah, kind of quality to the vocals that I really liked. So I felt like this had a lot going for it. John, were you into this?
Yes, I was. It kind of walked the line between like early LA punk and, I guess, kind of like M said, kind of like that Pretenders kind of clean sort of new wave sort of 80s rock sort of punk sound. And I dug it, and I thought it was cool. And yeah. So there you go. Lenny Bulby, we'll check her out. Here's something sad. Mick Rock has passed away. Mick Rock was a very famous photographer, and he took so many more famous album covers than I realized. He did some Stooges album covers. He did David Bowie. He did Ramones End of the Century. Stooges Raw Power, one of the most famous album covers of all time. Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll. David Bowie's Pinups. Lou Reed's Transformer. Queen 2, which of course is the famous Queen shot that was reused for Bohemian Rhapsody with all four heads kind of like in kind of like a cross type thing. And so he passed away. He was 72. They didn't give a cause of death. They basically said, we kind of want our privacy, which is understandable. But man, Mick Rock, I've been a fan. I honestly didn't know he did so many amazing album covers. So it's sad. But he really, like, it's amazing that one person was responsible for so much iconography in music. It just goes to show that he really was uber. Like, if you just think about the cover of maybe David Bowie's Pinups or Raw Power, like, Raw Power is just a picture of Iggy Pop, like, leaning forward. And you feel like, oh, anybody could do that. But no, not anybody could do that. Like, if you tried to do that, listener, it would just look like some guy taking a photo. But Mick Rock was able to make, like, Iggy Pop look like something jumping out of the darkness and something beyond human. Same with David Bowie's Pinups album. I have given photographers less than their due, perhaps, because photographers can be extremely annoying in that, like not so much now, but back in the day, we would like post an album cover, and sometimes the photographer would be like, "You didn't give me credit for the album cover in your article." It's like, well, you kind of don't get credit for that. You don't get credit for that. That's in the booklet. Every time we don't post the album cover, we don't give you credit. So I've been annoyed by many photographers in the past. And in the back of my mind, sometimes I'm like, well, I just took a picture. Like, it'll just be a picture of four guys standing in front of a brick wall. It's like, well, I could do that. You know, maybe I could do that, but I couldn't do Mick Rock. Even though it's really just a picture of Lou Reed, it's just a picture of David Bowie. He did Ziggy Stardust. He did Mott the Hoople. He did, let's see, what else? He did, Thin Lizzy. Wow. Amazing. Anyway, the point being is, Mick Rock is the kind of guy that's so talented, you don't realize that he's that talented just because he's that good. And it's sad, but he did a lot of really cool stuff. Hallie Bullitt, he did Dead Boys, We Have Come For Your Children, and Tough Darts as well. Any comments on Mick Rock's famous photos?
Yeah, why do people have to die much of the time? Someone has to die for you to realize how cool they were. Like, it makes me so sad. Like, I knew who he was. I did not have any understanding of that, like, so many of these iconic album covers were all just one dude. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, it's not just that these are some of the most iconic images of these artists, like, ever, like, in their entire careers. It's just, it's completely bananas. I think it was. It was in the statement that was released that said he was sometimes referred to as the guy that shot the 70s. And, like, that just does seem to be totally true. Yeah, it was really fun and cool to just look back through all these images and to see that there is, like, a thread line, you know, to see, like, that there, to be like, oh, yeah, you kind of see where this is, like, the same guy's kind of thumbprint is on all of these. And yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, same thing. I didn't know that he was responsible for all of the album covers that he is. And it's sad that he's died. And Hallie, like you were saying, like, all this to kind of come to light or come to the forefront after he's gone. But like, there's some comfort in it, like the album covers, because they're so iconic, because they're like, they'll always be around. And like the albums that he shot are so important. Like people aren't going to just stop listening to them. So he's going to live on forever, like as long as people are listening to music, because the covers are digitized. Like you can see it whenever you want and everything. So I think that's really cool and really, really powerful. And this was kind of cool. Like Rock was his real last name. So it's like with a name like that, he's kind of destined to do something like this. So it fits so well. So sad that he's gone, but he'll continue to live on forever, which is pretty cool.
How come no Michaels go by Mick anymore? I mean, like Mick, people start using the name Mick in like the 70s. No one goes by Mick anymore.
Mick is so good. Yeah. I'm with you. Mick is ready for a comeback.
How come it's Mike Erg and not Mick Erg?
As soon as people stop like naming their child, I don't know, like Tarragon. You know, like as soon as we like move past that era of like baby naming, maybe we can get back to Mick.
Mick. Okay. Well, let's see. Oh, speaking of iconic names, Rudimentary Peni is re-releasing their iconic album, Death Church, yet again. And you say, John, didn't they just re-release that in 2014 on Southern Records? Because I thought that's when it came out. That is when it came out. However, that was done by Southern Records, who did an amazing job with both the sound and the physical release. However, Southern Records did a terrible job with internal management and planning, and collapsed shortly thereafter. Thereby, Rudimentary Peni reissues until this Friday. Like the CD would go for $150 online of a reissue that just came out, you know, 6 years ago or whatever, which is crazy. So Sealed Records out of the UK is now re-releasing Death Church again, and to make it widely available, which is great. I have a suspicion that it will be closer to the original issue, in that it'll probably be kind of a normal press record with a normal jacket, as opposed to the super thick one that we got with the Southern reissues, because that's what Sealed Record tends to – Sealed Record basically – and you could – like the Pirates press, you know, argument is all their records are limited and they're super thick and kind of expensive, and, you know, it's like this is an item meant to last the ages, you know, and after they go out of print, they tend to stay out of print, where Sealed Records kind of – you know, prints, I don't want to say, does inexpensive versions of their records to keep them in print so people can get them if they want them. So, you know, there's merits to both sides, certainly. So I think and we'll see, but I think the one getting released this Friday is going to be similar to the original issue, and it'll be kind of just like a normal record, if you will. At any rate, the album is back in print after going out of print for a while and being very hard to find. It's one of the greatest albums of all time. It's one of the greatest punk albums of all time. It's one of the scariest and darkest albums of all time. I'm super psyched. I'm going to get one, even though I have two versions already. But, you know, listen, you can always use your third Death Church. People often say it's the greatest Rudimentary Peni record. I think it's one of the greatest. I like Cacophony the best, but Cacophony is the second craziest one. So Death Church is kind of the iconic one that's like, this is what Rudimentary Peni is, and everything else is kind of them growing or a derivation of that, but this is the core. It's also kind of where they matured, if you will. Not that long after they recorded Cacophony, 2 years later, lead singer Nick Blinko was involuntarily committed to a mental hospital for a couple of years, and then he got out. And then that kind of kicked off the modern era of Rudimentary Peni with 1995's Pope Adrian the 37th Psychiatric. At any rate, Rudimentary Peni rules. I'm super excited for this, and I think everyone should get it and more. What's your stance on Death Church?
Death Church. I agree that it's one of the best albums out there. It's one of those you never forget the first time you saw it, and you never forget the first time you listened to it. And it's great all around. And if there's more copies, that means there's more to go around. More people will see it, more people will listen to it, and it's all good. So spread the Rudimentary Peni love. Hallie, what's your take?
I'll be honest. I don't have a take. I'm glad this is coming out again. I've been sitting here this whole time racking my brain. I've just been wanting to think of a question I could ask John, so I could ask it in this tone of voice that John uses when he's imitating people asking him questions about stuff. but I couldn't really think of anything. So I don't know. I'm just going to talk like this for a second.
I like how Hallie's caricature of my voice says a lot like Mickey Mouse to me.
It'd be so awesome if Mickey Mouse would just like do a shout out to Rudimentary Peni.
Yes.
Well, let's play a Rudy P track, as we say in the note, Rudy P. Should we play Cosmic Hearse, or should we play Quarter Dead? Let's play When You Are a Martian Church, which is one of my favorite ones from this album, even though it's not one of the biggest ones. The biggest one, I think, is Cosmic Hearse or Quarter Dead or Rotten to the Core. I think those are kind of the three big ones, or maybe nothing but, or no, oh no, Radio Schizo is the big one. But let's play When You Are a Martian Church, because I have no idea what the song is actually about, but also it's, I used to think when you are in a Martian church, which kind of makes sense, like you're on Mars and you see this church and you go in, it's a bunch of Martians in church, which is weird because why would Martians be Christian? Because they're on Mars, you know, which is weird. But that's not the song. The song is When You Are a Martian Church, which I have no idea what that means, you know. Anyways, so this is Rudimentary Peni. When you are a And we are now both 20% more hyped up and aggressive due to the song, but also 20% more depressed because Rudimentary Peni has many depressing songs. Here's a guy that is influenced by Rudimentary Peni and also influenced by Crass, and many of the punkers hate this guy, but all the original anarcho-punkers love him, and there's something to be taken from that, is that if the original anarcho-punkers are down with something, I'm not saying it has to be good, but maybe you were a follower of the anarcho punkers, and you're not down with the weirder or the more expensive or, you know, more broad horizon stuff, maybe you don't quite get punk as much as you think you do. Bob Villain, he's putting out a new album, and actually I think it's his debut album, really. He's put out some digital EPs and maybe a couple of cassettes. The new album is called Bob Villain Presents The Price of Life. It's going to be out April 22 on his Ghost Theater label. He put out a video called GDP, and Hallie Boy, I am embarrassed to admit as to how long it took me to realize that Bob Villain is a playoff of Bob Dylan. It took me a long time to realize that. Embarrassingly long, so. Hallie Boy, are you down with Bob Villain and Bob Dylan? Would you like to see a Bob Villain-Bob Dylan mashup or combo take?
I think he could, like, destroy, like, a Bob Dylan tune, like a good old, like, political, like, protest old Bob Dylan song. I would love to see him sink his teeth into that. But I really think he's awesome. I think his music is amazing. I like, every time I check out something of his, I'm kind of blown away by it. What he's doing is just powerful. It is, like, it's not punk, but like the punk influence in it gives it such teeth and makes it so exciting. I mean, obviously it's going to make it more, you know, obviously it's going to make it easier for me to relate to because I'm coming from a punk background. But I just think that the combination of styles of music that he is sort of crushing together between his teeth is just so good. And I thought the lyrics were really moving and smart and powerful. And I, I was really interested in the Fred Perry situation. Like, what did you guys make of the Fred Perry, right? Like,
yeah,
it almost seemed like, I mean, it definitely seemed like it was like a spot, like a Fred Perry sponsorship, right? Like maybe like a paid product thing, but like, it was like, I almost, cause sorry, I should just explain, like they're wearing nothing really exclusively Fred Perry in the whole video, like several different outfits and looks, and it's all Fred Perry, and the logo is prominently displayed. The actual name is prominently displayed on a lot of the clothing. So, I don't know, even if it was like kind of like a paid partnership, I was almost like, fuck yeah. Like, you know, like, take this brand that the Proud Boys decided to co-opt and just like grab it back, man. Like, I thought there was something cool about it. But yeah, I don't know. I spent like half a second thinking about that. I was like, oh, is that weird? And then I was like, nope, it doesn't bother me at all. I don't know. Yeah. What did you guys think of this?
I've got two comments. First of all, you're like, well, this isn't punk. And I thought, yes, it's punk, Halle Bullet. Just because something isn't three chords doesn't mean it's not. But I realized, well, maybe by calling it punk, we're co-opting it. And maybe maybe saying it's punk is taking ownership of it when he doesn't necessarily want to be punk. He just wants to be hip hop or his own thing. You know what I mean? So maybe it isn't punk, not in the positive, but not in the negative, but in the positive sense. You know what I mean? Like, maybe punk, like, it is more political rap than it is punk. So to call it punk might be a little unfair to him. You know what I mean? But certainly he's influenced. I mean, he used to wear crash shirts all the time and stuff. So he's certainly influenced by punk. So maybe it's both. Maybe you can be hip hop and punk at the same time. I don't know. At any rate, it's cool. I was actually very anti the Fred Perry thing. It's like, oh man, you're this revolutionary guy, and you're already, you know, selling out to a big business, and you know, people are still figuring out where we stand on sponsorships in 2021. You know, the sponsorship question in 1997, which was much easier than it was in 2021, because nobody's getting paid. But you're right in the fact that maybe kudos to Fred Perry, because when the Proud Boys really did kind of make the Fred Perry black and yellow, like, that's our thing. Like, Fred Perry's like, we are not down with this, and we're not going to sell that shirt anymore, at least for a while, you know? And so maybe Fred Perry, by, you know, sponsoring a relatively revolutionary or lyrically revolutionary guy, maybe kudos to them. You know, maybe this alone makes the argument that not all big businesses are bad, and that maybe a big business can be good, particularly when they are agreeing with the statement that Proud Boys are bad. So maybe, you know, in punk, you know, corporation is bad, capitalism is bad. And I haven't always agreed with that, and I don't really fully agree with that, but maybe, and hip-hop has never agreed with that, mind you, never. Well, actually, aside from guys like Paris and Professor Griffin, for the most part, hip-hop generally doesn't agree with that statement. Maybe in 2021, it's time for punk to reevaluate his perspective. I don't know. But on the other hand, you got Martin Shkreli and Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and all those D-bags, so... And you know, medicine companies. I don't know, man. 2021's a mess. I don't know. I'm sorry. And more. What did you think of Bob Dylan's clothing choices?
So I looked this up. That makes it sound like I have way more information than I do. I looked up their official website, the Fred Perry site, and they have a Spotify playlist kind of embedded in the site. So Bob Dylan's on it. And then there's Witch Fever. So Witch Fever is like a great band out of the UK. They tour together. And then like Green Day's on it. Cher is on it. And like Red Hot Chili Peppers and stuff are on it. So I don't know how that ties into anything, but I just thought it was interesting because you don't usually go to like clothing sites and it's like, oh, here you go. Here's a curated playlist. So I don't really know what the connection is there. But with the clothing choice being like prominently Fred Perry, I thought it fit really well with the song, like the content of the song, and with the video, because, you know, it's like, they're talking about like money and desperation, and how the news and the media, they don't care about they don't focus on like real life and how people are struggling and what people are doing to try to stay afloat and get money and all this kind of stuff. And all they give a shit about is, oh, how are we perceived on the world stage with their GDP and all that business? So I thought that them using a well-known brand was like, yep, see, look, here we are. We're presenting the way you want us to present in a way almost, but we're making it our own. Like we're feeding into the capitalism, but we're subverting the capitalism, you know? So that's kind of what I thought of about that. Again, it could easily just be sponsorship. I don't know. But I think what Bob Dylan has done with like, they're on their own label, you know, they don't have to compromise. They're doing everything they want to do, saying what they want to say, and putting it all out there without having to bow to like any corporate pressure. I think that's just amazing. And to have that, especially now, be successful with it is just amazing. Like more power to them. So I'm looking forward to the album coming out, and the album cover is really cool too, because it's called the Price of Life, and they're scratching off like scratch ticket, and that's what the album cover is. So I thought it was really cool. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Hallie,
I watched this with my kid. Go ahead, John.
Go ahead. I was going to say something dumb.
I watched it with my kid, and he was like a little, you know, I mean, so we listen to a lot of punk, but we don't listen to. We listened to some hip hop. It was just, you know, it was like, it was really cool because it sparked a conversation about how music can be like a powerful way to like let your anger out, and like how important it is to like to when you're feeling angry, to find a way to like just put it out. Outside of your, you know, to get it out. And so it was, I don't know, it was cool to like try to have to put like this this like, you know, really defiant song, like to try to put it into context for like a 2.5-year-old was like really a challenge, but also like kind of cool, like kind of interesting. Sorry, John, what were you gonna say?
Is $89 reasonable for a shirt?
I wouldn't pay $89 for a shirt, but I'm like a notorious cheapskate. I mean, I'm a punk. I don't know. I don't pay $89 for shirts. I don't. Like, I don't I'm not against it, but like, I'm not going to do it. All I can think about is how many other things I would prefer to do with those $89.
I wonder what most people's, Emma, would you pay $89 for a shirt? And if you would, please say so. But if you want, you know.
No, I wouldn't. Unless it was like, I was guaranteed this is the only shirt you're ever going to need. You know, it'll be everything.
See,
in one garment.
I feel like most people spend a lot more on clothes than I do, honestly. Like, but I don't know, man. Like, I almost buy my shows exclusively off the discount rack or at Ross. I love Ross because at Ross, 98% of the stuff is trash, but 2% is amazing. You know what I mean? And that's the key. I've gotten $300 high tops for like $35 at Ross. You know what I mean? Like you got to look, you know? But the question is like, I wouldn't mind paying $89 for a shirt if it was made in the United States or Europe or Canada, but they're made in sweatshops anyway. So like, so what's the point? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I really wish we had more, you know, domestically made clothes. I wish the American consumer or the North American consumer would get around, you know what? Jeans shouldn't be $25. They should be $75 if they're made in the United States. I think that's a big part of a lot of problems we have right now. I mean, I don't know if that's a controversial take or not. Because what's funny is one of the Punk News editors, her good friend is deep into the fashion design or like and I was talking about that once, and she got like really mad at me, and she's like, well. You know, but first of all, you know, most places in China and, you know, aren't sweatshops, and those people need money, and you know, blah blah blah. And then maybe she's got a point, but it seems twisted to me. I think most clothes are made in sweatshops overseas, And most clothes are too cheap, and that's why. And I'd much rather have 3 pairs of jeans made in USA than 10 pairs made in, you know, Malaysia or something. I don't know. Is it, you guys have a perspective on that?
I mean, I don't know. I agree with you. Like, I think if you know that laborers were paid better to make your clothing, then that definitely justifies paying more for it, you know, if you know that, that cost went into making that particular item of clothing. I'll say for me, I really almost exclusively buy used clothes because you guys know that I'm completely crazed about the environment and worrying about the environment all the time. And so textile waste is like a big issue. It's a big problem. It's like a lot of what goes into landfills unnecessarily. And so I go to Buffalo Exchange, dudes. You get like your fucking, you get your style and threads. It's almost like well curated because the people at Buffalo Exchange, like the people that work there are a lot cooler than I am. So they like only take like super cool used clothing. So I just like, I shop there. That's my take.
What's a pair of pants cost at Buffalo Exchange?
Oh my God. Yeah, 20. If it was super, super, super nice, maybe you'd pay 30, 35. Mm.
Well, they have people clothing choices at Punk News. I was going to say something, but I can't remember what it was. Listen, people.
Listen, if I can, I'm always going to try to shoehorn something about the environment into the podcast. So I apologize, but like I'm never going to miss an opportunity to like proselytize about the environment.
Here's what I want to say. I'm all for that, Hallie. Alternative Tentacles, all their shirts made in USA. Steve Ignorant of Crass, all his shirts made in England. So keep that in mind. And they're not that expensive. That's what frustrates me the most is Punk News has made shirts a couple of times, and it's not that much more expensive to have shirts made in this is pre-COVID. I don't know about now, but like it was only like $2 more to have USA shirts than you know wherever shirts. Like so, it's like it just green. You know what I mean? It's like at that time, Punk shirts were $15. It's like, well, if we can have shirts made in USA, let's just do $20 for shirts, and everyone will be like, well, this has gone to good working condition. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know about now though. You know, I don't know. Listen, people, as I've said before the podcast, I'm scrambled today. Sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you're the nail. And this week I'm the nail, but listen, that's a part of life. You know what I mean? All summer long, I was bragging. I got a book coming out. Suckers, take that. Pop, pop, pop. You know, I was at Punk Rock Bowling and me and Bonnie Message were hanging out. Pop, pop, pop. Well, sometimes you get slapped back, you know? So listen, people, John's losing his mind. And so it's good. I've got things to anchor me. And here's one of the things that anchoring me is the new Scout LP. The Scout LP is called How Flowers Grow. It's out on Flat Spot Records. We interviewed Kat, the singer, and we did a review. And I think this album is fantastic. I think it, you know, for me, it's very difficult to do interesting modern hardcore because how many times can you sound like Poison Idea? How many times can you sound like Discharge? How many times can you sound like Damage? It's like, it's been done. Ceremony was very cool because they kind of echoed back to that era of hardcore, but they were unique. But, you know, a lot of hard, like, I post-COVID, I haven't been going to as many shows as usual. Before COVID, I was going to a million shows, and I would go to my favorite place, Cousin Danny's, which is closed down now. And there was this guy, there was a person there that would throw shows. Jake and one other, and Will, I think, would throw shows. And they would have, like, they would do 3 or 4 shows a week. I would go like one a week or maybe one every other week, but a lot. And, you know, they always have interesting bands, but, you know, as is the nature of punk, especially maximum role style punk, there's going to be a hardcore band that sounds exactly like Poison Idea or exactly like, any number of modern hardcore bands. And they're good and they're fine. And everyone's like, oh, my God, I can't believe, you know, bloody Nuclear Waste is playing on. I'm like, oh, it's so good, you know. And you're there, you're like, yeah, this is cool, but it just sounds like hardcore, you know. It's like it's good hardcore, but I've heard it before 1,000 times. Scowl is not that. Scowl, I don't know exactly what it is aside from the one track that is kind of like alt rock, if you will, or indie rock. The rest, it's like twisty, turny hardcore, but there's something about that's unique. In part, well, actually, the cover art goes a long way. The cover art is very non-standard hardcore cover art. The themes are very non-standard hardcore cover art, or at least the use of metaphor and the directness and the delivery. And I just think this is one of the best hardcore records of the year. Probably maybe the best hardcore record of the year. And more, Scowl. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you say? And is John losing his mind and rambling incoherently?
It's sometimes you need to just lose your mind and ramble incoherently. You'll find it back again. You know, it'll all work out. This album is a masterpiece. This album is awesome. I have been listening to it a lot, and it just hits so well, and it's just, you know, it's something for everything, you know? Like, I think it's the second song is Dead to Me. That is just perfect, because it's just ferocious, and it's just the best, you know? There's so much going on, and Seeds to Sow, the slower one with like the saxophone and the clean vocals, like that is amazing, and it's like right in the middle, and then right after that is Idle Roaring Room, which just goes like full on, like back in, and it's, oh my god, it's perfect. It's so good. I've been working on like finalizing my list for the year, and I've had to tweak how I do it now, because this has to be in the top five at least somehow. So yeah, like hardcore is so exciting, like especially this year, like there's been so many really, really cool releases. And just, you know, it's like, I want more of this going forward. Like, this is just perfect. And John, your interview with Kat Moss is just awesome. Like, everything that you guys talk about, like, I listened to it, and it was, like, everything was just resonating, you know? Mm. And it was really good. It was like, I needed this today. I needed this to kind of put things in perspective and strengthen convictions, I guess. It's just so good. And I mean, like when you have lines that are like, I'm so comfortably fucked up and I'm gonna rip you to fucking shreds, like it's just love it. Hallie, what do you think of Scowl?
I don't know. I'm psyched for this album, even though I know I'm not gonna listen to it much. It's like a little more hardcore for me. Do you know, for me, I know, like, you know that I wish that they would put out an entire album of stuff that was like Seeds to Sow, like, because that song is so, so good. It's and I get that it's like an outlier, but it's just like, so I'm like dying for more songs like that. But I don't know. I am so psyched for a band that can pull off like such totally different sounds, like, you know, I just think that really requires a lot of talent and like a flexibility within your talent, you know. So yeah, I don't know, I'm psyched for Scowl. That's a good band, man.
Here's another good band, but maybe this is perhaps more controversial. F'd Up has actually this year, well, this year and next year, I think they're releasing four records. To step back in the day, F'd Up would literally release like 12 records a year, mostly 7 inches, but it was like, they were like the Melvins, but even more so. It was like, oh, we got a record coming out this month and next month. After Chemistry of Common Life, that kind of slowed down, and they kind of did one record a year, only one record a year, although they would have associated singles and so forth. This year and next year, you know, it's all kind of one big jumble. I think they're putting out four records. They're putting out the re-release of Epics and Minutes on vinyl for the first time ever, the re-release of David Comes to Life on gold vinyl, The Amazing Year of the Horse, and now they're putting out a compilation called Do All Worlds Can Do, which collects all the 7-inch B-sides from David Comes to Life and another demo and I think one other track. So it's basically all the rarities from the David Comes to Life era. I think it's very cool that F'd Up is doing this. I think it's cool they're putting out archival releases. I think it's cool. I mean, really, F'd Up is talking about how the Melvins were influential on them, and it does seem like they're following a Melvins model, and that, like, you know, putting out tons of new stuff, but also keeping the old stuff in print, and I don't want to say repackaging, but representing the old stuff to kind of keep it fresh and keep it interesting, and maybe pass it over, and also to make it something that a collector would want. That being said, everyone loved David Comes to Life. I liked it. I thought it was a little bit of a boring record. I loved Chemistry of Common Life. I thought David Comes to Life was okay, not quite the masterpiece that everyone's. I think Year of the Horse is the masterpiece, if you ask me. But I thought Dave Comes Alive a little boring, and that's kind of when they went from punk to indie rock, sort of. They've since gotten freakier and have come back to fall on punk, if you ask me. But it's cool it's coming out. I definitely ordered it. But Dave Comes Alive is not my favorite era. Hallie Bullet, Dave Comes Alive. Where do you stand on that era of effed up? The Matador, kind of more mature, kind of more restrained side of effed up.
Oh, yeah. I loved that record. I mean, that was, you know, that was like what opened the door for me, you know, for someone that's like, you know, like looking for a melody. That was what, you know, that was what opened the door for me to like listen to and then like the rest of their stuff. So, yeah, that album is like everything to me. I love that album. I'm super excited about this, like to hear like unreleased demos and stuff. I think I'll definitely be checking this out. What did I say?
And more. David Comes to Life. Where do you stand?
What? How did I just bring the conversation to a screeching halt? Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Em.
Oh, yeah. I like David Comes to Life. I don't listen to it that often because Queen of Hearts makes me cry. I don't know why. Every single time I listen to the song, it's just I can't do it. And skipping it feels wrong. So I don't listen to the album very much. I do like the album. So I listened to the two songs that they've released so far on the Do All Words Can Do. So there's The Truest Road, which is really, really good. And Do All Words Can Do, that's my favorite of the two. It's so good. Like, it should have been. It's just, I love that song. It's really good. So... I am excited for this and I do want to listen to it. Because both of the songs have been released so far, like they click more, you know, than some of the stuff on David Comes to Life. I love Fucked Up and I'm so, so glad that they're releasing like a lot of stuff, over the next little bit. Because again, well, like same with the Rudimentary Peni re-release, the more fucked up in the world, like the better the world is. And Year of the Horse was definitely just nuts. Like that was awesome too. Made the day.
And actually, here's the question. You know.
Yes.
All bands kind of have hills and valleys, you know. Some bands have one hill and then the rest of the valley they break up. Some bands, like Nick Cave, has many hills and valleys, or Flaming Lips have many hills and valleys. During the ChemCom era and Dave Comes to Life era, effed up was huge. All the magazines were putting them on the cover, you know, particularly Dave Comes. I think Glass Boys is kind of where the hype kind of burned down a little bit. That being said, since then, effed up's been doing some really, really interesting things. What do you guys think the status is of effed up right now? Should people care more than they appear to care? Like Year of the Horse was a massive accomplishment, and it didn't really seem to get that much press, if you ask me. It's just because the band's been around for a while, and you know, press tend to focus more on new bands and established bands, or are we just effed up sycophants and they're not as great as we all think they are? Hallie Bullet. Your
Year of the Horse was it's a weirder choice artistically that they're making. I mean, I don't think they're trying to chase after that kind of like hipster buzz and commercial success that they were having then, because otherwise I don't think they would release Year of the Horse. There's no, you know what I mean? It's just, it's musically just going in a thousand different directions. It's just requiring more of the listener. It's not in a, you know, it's not in a nice, like catchy, accessible package the way, you know, something like Queen of Hearts is, you know what I mean? That song is so good. And I'm like very excited for this. I'm very excited to hear just like a different version of it. You know what I mean? Like, cause sometimes just hearing like a demo. Yeah. Like a lot of times it's not quite as good, but just it sort of like gives you a new perspective on something that you love and helps you understand it a little better or something, you know, or enjoy it in a new way. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, I mean, don't you think, John, like, I don't think you release a thing like Year in the Horse if what you're trying to do is recreate what was happening for you as a band when you put out David Comes to Life, right?
I hadn't thought of it that way. I would, and being me, I'm thinking strictly of the dollar. But, you know, at the tour a lot, you know, and they sold a lot of records. I feel like they don't sell that many records. And here's the root of my concern, frankly. I love Effed Up. I think they're great. I wish they would kind of get more praise than they do get a lot of praise, honestly. But like, I feel that they're doing very cool stuff that almost no one else is doing. And the fact of the matter is, if you're doing really cool art and you're not getting paid for it, it's less like you're going to be able to keep doing it. Jesse Michaels has a great quote, is that he'd rather the great artists get paid for making music than flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. You see what I'm saying? And so when you're doing these, and when you're spending a lot of money on these super complex songs and you're not getting your return on the investment, and it cost you $20,000 to make this cool thing and no one really seems to care, or only, you know, John and 17 other people seem to care, it can kind of bum you out. So I just hope, and this is my concern, I just hope they're getting enough emotional reward and financial reward for them to keep going, because it's not as if I'm being some kind of patron, or, you know, some kind of like, oh, I hope FF's having a good time. I want the music to keep flowing on my end. I want them to make it to the end of the Zodiac. So I'm hoping they're getting what they need, so I get what I need, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. It was interesting, like, just hearing you say that quote from Jesse Michaels. It just reminded me of like a book that our friend just put out. This music writer Dan Ozzie just put out a book called Sellout. Have you guys heard of this? It's called Sellout, and then the subtitle is The Major Label Feeding Frenzy That Swept Punk, Emo, and Hardcore, 1994 to 2007. And yeah, just that you talking about what Jesse said, John, it just reminded me of that, because it is an entire book about the conversation of like, is it okay for punks to get paid, and what happens when musicians don't get paid for their art? It's just like the whole book is kind of like tackling that issue. So it just reminded me of that. And so I thought I would mention it, because I think Chris has started reading it already and says it's a great read. Sorry. Yeah, no one asked me to plug that. I just, I felt like it came up in conversation, so I'm just mentioning it. Back to our regularly scheduled program.
So what else are we talking about? On the Punk News Podcast, we talk about ska. And I will say that I have taken a certain amount of glee at being the lone, actually, well, there's another person on this podcast that I think agrees with me, and the strict anti, well, I don't have a strict anti-ska stance, but a general anti-ska stance. And I'm not going to call that person out, because maybe that person doesn't want to be aligned in the ska attack. Because, you know, in true punk adversarial style, I was like, ska, 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 hooray. I'm like, no, ska actually sucks. Except for, you know, Catbite, which rules. However, Oceanator has released a track with Jer, who is in We Are the Union. And Jer's got their own thing going on, too, called Jer. And the new track by Oceanator is called Too Late. Oceanator is not a ska band. It's kind of like an indie rock thing. But their new track, Too Late, with Jer, is kind of a ska type thing. And I will say, I really enjoyed it. So it just goes to say, show, ska can be done well if it's done tastefully. If we just say ska, 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 then it's obnoxious and it's going to kill itself like it did in the 90s. And
wait,
I
was
won't
that supposed to be farting? What was that noise?
Was that trombone
playing gone wrong?
That was an obnoxious air trombone. And so if, like Catbite, if we can use ska with some taste, with some panache, with some originality, like Oceanator and JR doing here, I'm all for it. And I dug this. And I just hope the new ska, everyone's saying ska, ska, ska. Listen, ska is cool. I definitely love Jamaican ska. I like two-tone ska. But let's be careful here. You know, ska's got a checkered past. So let's put out the good stuff and the not so good stuff. Maybe let's not celebrate that just because you want to relive 1997. That's what I'm saying. And I would say this does not relive 1997. This is good and more. Where do you stand on the ska battle and Oceanator?
I was not around during the great ska wars. So a lot of stuff like does sound kind of
obnoxious.
But I'm not super jaded about ska yet. I really liked this. I thought it was cool. I was surprised because, like, Oceanator, really, really good. Love her stuff. Didn't think ska was going to be something that I'd hear from the band. But I'm pleasantly surprised. It was really good. The horns, when they were there, sounded great. The lyrics were really good. It was more like introspective and, you know, like kind of made you think a bit. The art's really cool. And Oceanator is on tour with Jeff Rosenstock, and Jer plays on like some Ska Dream shows. So I just wrote down, Ska might be required to tour with Jeff Rosenstock while I was listening to it. I don't think that's true, but it's just, there's a whole network now, you know, it's interesting. It's really neat. Hallie, what did you think of Too Late?
Like pretty much exactly what John said. Like I was like, because I feel like every time we play a ska thing on this podcast, I feel like what I always end up saying is I hated this. but I actually don't think that I hate ska in general. I just have not liked the stuff that's been coming out lately. And I feel like I've continued to say, I think if something good came out in this genre right now, that I would be open to it, that I would like it. And this just exactly proves me right, because this song is great and I totally enjoyed it. And it's exactly what I've been asking for. If you want to revive ska, like be my guest, but like do it with originality, do it with authenticity, do it with intelligence. I'm there for that. I'm totally, totally down with that. Like, but if you want to do like Bowling for Soup, like hack recycled bullshit, I'm not interested. But I felt very vindicated by this, honestly, because I was like, yes, like if it's done well, I can absolutely listen to new ska and enjoy it. And I thought this was like really, really great, actually. I like really, it felt really good to just like enjoy a new ska song. It felt very good. I liked it. It made me happy.
Well, let's play some Oceanator and come back and wrap this bad boy on up. This is Oceanator and Jer doing Too Late.
When you're all up, you've been a little white, but you've always been bigger than everyone else. And there's one thing that you're so afraid of, it's become such a part of yourself. You can never, ever, ever forget it, cause it's there with you every day. And you'll never, ever, ever be rid of it, cause the skies are here to stay. You'll never conquer the mountain, cause you don't believe that you can. And nobody else believes in you either, ever since.
we're back. Honestly, I started off in a good bad mood, and now I'm in a good mood. I always love hanging out with Em and Hallie. It always brightens my week. I gotta say, this hour really flew by, didn't it? Or am I just still losing my mind and I'm insane? Like, what if Hallie was like, "No, John," this felt like, John, it's 2 a.m. You've been talking for 4 hours straight. You know, like,
Well, the thing is that because sometimes we do enjoy talking to each other a lot, I think, and so. Yeah. I think an hour is a shorter episode for us. Like, I think we often are like, we'll do like hour and a half episodes. So yes, this felt like it flew by because we actually stuck. We actually stuck to just like an hour of talking.
And
I did it again.
Podcast over.